everyone. This is the Codependent Perfectionist Podcast. I'm Alana Carvalho, and thank you so much for joining me today. I have a special guest on. Her name is Candy Washington. I'm going to have Candy introduce herself in just a moment. We're going to be talking about some issues related to codependency and perfectionism, having to do with self-esteem, boundaries, self-love, all of that good stuff. So Candy, can you just share with us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Welcome, everyone. I'm Candy Washington, and I'm the founder of 1214 Media Productions, where we create inspiring content across TV, film, and digital platforms. And it's all rooted in self-care and wellness. And I also hold a BA in philosophy from Georgetown University.
And I love a lot of your posts, Candy, that you talk a lot about all different sorts of things, but things that I find very relatable to codependents and perfectionists. And I wanted to chat more about some of that stuff here today. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how you kind of came to understanding what self-love and kind of, I guess, self-esteem means to you and why that was important for you to work on.
Absolutely. So I discovered the power of self-love during my own journey to battling my own codependency. And when I realized that I was codependent, the really aha moment for me was, where was I deriving my self-worth from? And I was deriving it from performance. I was a very performance-based, valued person. So if I could say yes to you, if I could be the best daughter, the best friend, the best partner, mm-hmm. then that is when I felt my value. You know, as long as I was performing, I was needed and wanted. And that was rooted in the abandonment wound. Mm-hmm. Like, as long as I can give to you and say yes to you and perform for you, you won't leave me. Mm. And I realized that was rooted in low self-esteem.
Right.
It was rooted in the sense of, there's something about me that's not good enough. There's something about me that isn't worthy. There's something about me that's not deserving. Mm-hmm. And I have to prove and show that worth to everyone around me in order to know that I'm valuable, because they're telling me that I'm valuable. Then
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Candy.
Yeah. And then my switch was from performative value to intrinsic value. This is the value that you have simply because you're here. It's divinely given. It's within. And that is the type of value that is unshakable. You know, no one can give it. Therefore, no one can take it away. So I don't have to give or do or perform in order to prove my value and worth. I simply am worthy and valuable and lovable as I am. And I think when you switch from performative value, I get my worthiness from what I do, to intrinsic value, I get my worthiness based upon who I am, then that's when you really step into your self-confidence. That's when you step into your self-love. That's when you step into high self-esteem. Right. It's esteem of yourself. How do you regard yourself? And then when you have high self-esteem, and to me, having high self-esteem really just means I honor and I respect myself first. I make myself a priority because I'm worthy of being so. Right. And then once you have that relationship with yourself, that of course is rooted in self-love. And self-love is just having a compassionate relationship to yourself. It's giving yourself grace. It's forgiving yourself. It's not always liking yourself. Some people are like, oh, self-love means you like yourself. Absolutely not. It's, if I like myself, I love myself. And if there's a moment where I don't like myself because I'm a human being, I still love myself. You know, think about a parent-child dynamic. You know, a parent may not always like their child. You know, they're screaming, they're having a tantrum, but you always love them.
Right.
That's the unconditional, compassionate, graceful love that you want to hold for yourself. And when you hold yourself in that space, that's when your confidence shines. That's when your self-trust shines. That's when you respect yourself. And when the relationship with yourself changes, your relationship with everything and to everyone has no choice but to also change.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned so many important things there. One of which being that you're absolutely right. Like, our value as codependents and perfectionists comes from the external, right? And so it's very difficult for most of us to figure out how to transition into getting that same validation, which it won't feel exactly the same, because in many ways it's kind of like a drug where you get the hit from the other person, where, you know, from the accolades you get or whatever it may be, that that's going to feel very different when it comes from that internal place, that intrinsic place that you're talking about. And I'm wondering if you had that experience where it felt like, oh God, I'm not getting this in the same way, and it's going to feel different now.
Oh yes, absolutely. I have and grew up with a narcissistic mother. Mm-hmm. She's not, and when I say narcissistic, I don't mean that in a bad or mean or malignant way at all. It's just what her personality happens to be like. And I'm very, very empathic. So I was very, very enmeshed with her, which meant that I identified with how she felt. I was able to predict her moods, and I was always performing and protecting of her because I felt like I was an extension of her. I could actually like feel her feelings. So when she would tell me, oh, you're my favorite. Oh, I love you. You did such a great job. Or, you know, thank you so much. They were like little, you know, hits of a high. You know, I would get that high. You know, I would feel, you know, worthy. I would feel loved. Like, to me, that was love. Right. But that's a dependent type of love. It's not an unconditional love, right? And so once I started to individuate, you know, what are my actual feelings? Who am I as my own person? You know, outside of being so enmeshed with my mother, who is me as myself? I no longer needed her approval to know that I was worthy and that I was lovable and that was enough, because I got it from myself. Right. And the difference was, when you validate yourself, when you approve of yourself, when you are secure in who you are, it's a very calm, it's a very steady feeling.
Right.
Where when you're getting it from somebody else, it's like a roller coaster and you're chasing the high. You know, I need her to say I'm the best. I need her to say I'm the favorite. I need her to say that I'm saving her, blah, 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 blah. Because, right. You know, the narcissist and the empath, they're basically two sides of the same coin. We're both using each other for something. Mm-hmm. You know, the narcissist is using us as their, you know, supply, and we're using them for those hits of validation, you know? So we're both using each other just in different ways.
Right.
So when I got very clear on, you know what, Candy, you don't need to be anybody's favorite and or best. You just need to look yourself in the mirror and say, I am my own favorite. I am my own best. I validate myself. I'm secure in who I am. I can make decisions on my own. You know, when you get to that place through self-care practices, when you get to that place, then you're no longer chasing that high outside of you, and the roller coaster stops, the chaos stops, the drama stops. And it's really funny, because once you get that stability, to me, I call it inner peace.
Mm-hmm.
It's that inner peace. It's that inner knowingness. It's that inner calm. And then you're no longer attracted to the chaos. You're no longer attracted to the drama. You're no longer attracted to the roller coaster of, am I good enough? Am I not good enough? Am I chosen? Am I not chosen? Am I disposable? Am I not disposable? All of that kind of falls to the wayside.
Right.
And you're no longer attracted to that, because you have that inner peace, and that peace feels so good that you don't want anything to disturb it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think what you're speaking to must speak to years of therapeutic work that you've obviously done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it's important for people to remember that it can be a long road to get to what Candy's talking about, but that, like, wow, when you're on that other side, oh my God, does it feel amazing? And there is so much peace and freedom, and it's not so, everything's not so dependent on other people or experiences to make us feel a certain way. But you brought up an important point, and I think that, you know, when we go into therapy, a lot of us codependents and perfectionists, we want to kind of just blame other people. And I think there's an important piece that you mentioned there where you had to look at the dynamic with your mother and mm-hmm. identify how both of you were playing into that dynamic. And, you know, that's really important because obviously as kids, we don't necessarily have choice over our dynamic. We're not choosing to be in it. But right. at some point, we are like getting something out of a certain dynamic that we have that we might be stuck in or, you know, into our adulthood, we continue it. And that it is really important for us to look at like, whoa, what's my part in this? How am I like playing into the negativity that's around me or, you know, the difficulties that I'm facing or the fact that people aren't respecting my boundaries, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, you said this thing around the drama, and I think many codependents are addicted to the drama. You know, yeah. it's hard to get away from, right?
Yeah, we're addicted to the drama because it feels like home and it feels like love. You know, mm-hmm. those little shots of, you know, the high, it's like, oh, like this is what love is. Right. It's a type of love, but it's not authentic love. It's not mm-hmm. unconditional love. It's not that steady love where it just is. It's not perform and do, you know, in order to get the love. It's just, it's there. And I love that you brought up about, you know, as children, we don't have a choice in it. Cause really, you know, becoming a codependent or empathic, it's really more of a coping mechanism. It's a way that we survive. It's a way to make sure that we honestly don't die as a child, like in our brains, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If our caretaker is there and we want to keep them safe, if we keep them safe, we're able to keep ourselves safe, right? But yeah. just like you said, what kept us safe in childhood and adulthood is actually what begins to sabotage us.
Right.
Because instead of operating from our adult brain, we're still operating from that little six-year-old girl who thinks that she has to people please, who thinks that she has to, you know, have no sense of self, who thinks that she has to have no boundaries, that she doesn't have any wants or needs, because that's what kept her safe when she was little. But that's what's sabotaging her now in her womanhood. And when I got really clear on who do I want to run the show in my life? Do I want my little six-year-old to run the show? I don't think so. I want to give her a break. She did a really great job. And I'm going to show her so much appreciation and love and gratitude. You did such a good job keeping us safe. But adult Candy, I'll take it from here. And that's a part of the reparenting that we do to ourselves. When those pieces of our psyche, when those pieces of ourselves that come up, that has been wounded, that gets scared, that gets triggered, that gets into, you know, defense mode or, you know, whatever coping mechanisms that we have, you can let the adult brain take over and say, you know what, you can rest. And I got it from here. And we right. know how to take care of ourselves. And I think that's kind of the beauty of reparenting yourself is you get to be the parent to yourself that you always deserved to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes doing the work, we feel like, oh, well, I'm bashing my mom or I'm bashing my parents. And that's not it. We're going to give them some grace too. They're human beings. They did the best they could with what they had. You know, and we're going to give them grace for being humans. That was another big thing for me when I stopped idealizing my mother and just accepted her that, you know what, my mother first and foremost is a woman and she's a human being who right. happens to be my mother.
Yep.
And when I got very clear on that, she is her own person with her own trauma, with her own journey, with her own healing, with her own X, Y, and Z, I was able to look at her with more compassion rather than through neediness,
right?
As that codependent little girl that so needed, but now I'm an adult. And if I can look at my mother as a human being and show her grace, that's also a part of the healing journey. And also like we were talking about taking, you know, accountability, that's another huge piece of becoming your own person and empowering yourself. When you say, hey, you know what? I see the same exact patterns. You know, I'm that same person in my friend group. I'm that same person in my romantic partnerships. I'm the same person at work. I'm the same person in my family dynamics. So the common denominator is me. So mm-hmm. I am the one that has to change, but that should be so empowering because I don't need anybody else to change. I can change. I have the power to change my life, but I think sometimes people think taking responsibility for their own healing, for their own growth, for their own development, for their own individuation. They think that it's blaming them or it's a critical thing where it's like, no, there's no blame. There's no judgment. We're leaving that at the door. But as adults, we're going to start taking responsibility and accountability for the quality of our own lives and our own relationships. And the beauty is you and only you have the power to do that. So that should be really good news because at the end of the day, the only person you can control is yourself.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's the only person you have to control.
Yeah. You know, you're speaking to like a therapeutic issue that comes up very frequently in therapy space, which is that, you know, I find that many of us come into therapy in our victimhood, which is okay. I mean, that's a starting place. And oftentimes that's what brings us in, right? And there's a necessity in some ways to seeing how one was victimized. And then at some point, there has to be a transformation to realizing that we're not just the victim, that we actually have the power to change many things in our life, many more than we often realize. And, you know, I'm very much in agreement with you that to me, that feels like a really wonderfully empowering place to be. It's just unfortunate that not everyone can get there because it's very difficult to let go of being a victim, you know, especially if you've been highly victimized throughout your life, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it takes a lot of courage to move out of that place of being a victim into a place where you can feel really empowered and say like, wow, I have the ability to change my life and feel differently.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I think you have to really want it. I think you have to really make that choice that you want a different way of being.
Right.
And that's really what, and just for me personally, that's really what it was for me. I was like, I want a different way of being. Like, I don't want to be a person that can't say no to someone. I don't want to be a person that feels resentment because I don't have any boundaries. Like it's somebody else's fault that I don't respect myself. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be a person that keeps dating the same exact person over and over and over again. You know, I don't want to be that person. So when I got very clear on, I'm really sick and tired of being this person, and I want to actually consciously choose who I want to be, that is when the shift really happened for me. It took a while. The moment was quick, but the journey was long, and it's right. Still happening. It's still a daily thing, you know? But when I got clear on, you know what, Candy, you're an adult. This is your life. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you talk about spirituality at all, but when I say God, I don't mean any particular religion or anything like that. I just mean whatever your connection to a divine or a higher power is. And for me, when I started realizing that, wait a minute, you know what? My life is a gift that God gave me to live.
Right.
So why would I ever squander that feeling as though I have to prove my worthiness and value to other people when my worthiness and value was already divinely given to me. Mm-hmm. And I had been so enmeshed with my mom that I didn't realize I was so focused on her life mm-hmm. that there was no space for me to focus on my life.
Right.
And my life was the life that God gave me to live, not hers. And when I got very clear on that, I was like, all right, we got to start making some changes. You know, you don't know what a boundary is. Let's figure it out. And then I realized, oh, a boundary, that's the space where I can love myself and love you at the same time. Mm. So mm. I'm not abandoning who I am. I'm not betraying myself in order to make you feel loved.
Right.
You know, I'm no longer doing that. Because now I'm clear on who I want to be. And I want to be a woman that respects herself. I want to be a woman who's clear on who she is. I want to be a woman who sets boundaries with other people and herself. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be a woman that has inner peace and confidence. And if I want to be a woman like that, then I have to start implementing certain things in my life that reflect who I now am.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, sometimes I tell people, listen, you got to fake it till you make it, you know, like,
because, yeah,
you know, you're not always going to feel that way. Like, as you like identify intellectually, it's time to make changes and get it, you know, you usually get it in your head before you get it in your heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think that that's okay. As long as you can kind of withstand this place of kind of dissonance where your head is telling you one thing and your heart might be like aching over the changes that you're making, even though it knows deep down it's right for you. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, sometimes we just have to like go with it, knowing it's the best for us and not knowing where it's going to take us or if we're actually ever going to feel that way. And then the hope is somewhere down the line, we actually will, and it will start to change, you know? Because people say to me all the time, like, oh, well, but it doesn't feel good to put this boundary in place. Or, you know, I feel guilty after I do that. And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And you're going to for quite some time until it becomes a norm in your life. And that might be years. You know, we're rewiring a whole system. We're rewiring your brain. You know, we're rewiring your trauma response, you know, system in your body. So there's so much going on that it's not so easy just to suddenly feel like, oh, this is great, you know, especially for those of you who are, you know, adults, older adults listening to this going, all right, but I want to make changes. Can I do that? Yeah. Just know that it's going to take time and you just have to be persistent with it. You know, you spoke about something else, Candy, which was this piece around wanting, you know, the validation from mom. Mm-hmm. And that's such a big one for so many of us. Like we want that, like we either want like the validation or we want our parent to suddenly be somebody who they're not, or, you know, we have lots of fantasies around, you know, what we want in our life. That's probably unrealistic to our circumstances. But mm-hmm. what I just wanted to normalize for anyone listening that it's normal, even into your elderly ages, to want that validation from your parents or want the love or have the fantasy, even if they're dead, you know, even after they've been deceased, it still stays with you, which is really incredible. So I just want to normalize that because I think we can hold a lot of dualities at the same time. Like we can both recognize that we're no longer going to give somebody else the power to validate us or not, or love us or not, or accept us or whatever it may be. And we can still want that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's such a tough place to be in. I don't know if you've had that experience.
Yeah, I have. For me, getting through that was really understanding the difference between needs and wants. You know, just like you said, you still wanted. But when I realized I was on my healing journey, I wanted the validation from my mom, but it was no longer this fantasy that I needed it.
Right.
That somehow without it meant I wasn't good enough or, you know, not worthy or not lovable or all of like, you know, the stuff that we tell ourselves that are not true. So if there's something that I want, if I get it or not, okay, that's fine. If I get it, great. If I don't get it, not. But since I was able to separate, I no longer need this. Once I stopped needing it, the funny part is it showed up even more once I right. just let it go. Mm-hmm. And then I also got really clear on, you know, like mom's approval or whoever's approval it was. Is this actually something that they're expecting of me? Or is this just a narrative that I've had in my mind for so long that I'm actually projecting that expectation onto them?
Right.
Because I think a lot of times where I felt like I'm not doing enough, I'm not, you know, I'm a failure, I'm this and that, blah, 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 that perfectionist in me, or even though if someone were to look at everything you're doing, it's like, wow, that's amazing. That's so cool. But because I was stuck in that perfectionism, because I was stuck in that codependence, I wasn't able to even take joy in my own accomplishments in life because I was always, well, what's the next thing that's going to get to that next hit?
Right.
Absolutely. I wasn't even able to be present to enjoy everything that I was working for and accomplishing because my mind was fixated on, oh, I got this. Well, what's the next thing that's going to get me that accolade, that gold star, that atta girl, that you did it, you're the best, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So another thing that came out of being clear on what's a want versus a need, and versus am I projecting my own expectations onto someone, was being in the present moment. You know, just being really clear and being present and thinking, you know, are my thoughts, are my projections ruminated in the past that no longer exists? And I'm just bringing all of that past baggage now into the present moment. Or what's actually happening right now in the present moment? What's actually real versus this fantasy I've created?
Yeah, I think that's so important what you're touching on here, because I don't think people realize how important being present actually is in the healing journey. You know, we can kind of talk about it in an intellectual way, but until you can really like slow down and watch what's going on for you in your kind of every moment, you know, not in an obsessive way, but just being super present, super mindful with yourself. It can make so many shifts because it connects you back to yourself, which is really one of the main aspects of codependency recovery, is connecting back to who you really are underneath all of the stuff, right? And I do believe that being present with yourself and your interactions and your daily experiences is an essential piece of that.
Oh, 100%. Because the present moment is where your power is. It's where you actually have choice. And it's also where you have the ability to affect any change. You know, it's like what they say, like, you know, worrying about the past is depression, worrying about the future is anxiety. Mm-hmm. But being in the present is where your power is, because that's really the only thing that we have is right. This moment right now. And that's when I also realized a big thing in my healing journey was, what is my relationship to my thoughts? That was a really big game changer for me. And being present and meditating and prayer and journaling really helped with that. You know, because I think for the majority of my life, my thoughts were on autopilot. Mm-hmm. You know, they were just running on whatever program they were set to, blah, 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 blah. There was no observing. There was no critical thinking. You know what I mean? Like, I could do critical thinking in like my class or school, you know, but when it came to my own thoughts, I was just on default. Yeah. But when I got present, when I got clear, when I got still, then I was able to step into my higher self and be the observer of my thoughts. And then I realized, oh, wow, my relationship to my thoughts should actually be authoritative and compassionate. So if I'm thinking a thought that doesn't serve me, I can just say, okay, thought, I hear you. But I'm going to choose to think this different thought. You have no power here. You know, I actually am the authority of my thoughts. I get to decide what thoughts have meaning, which thoughts don't, which thoughts get to stay, and which thoughts have to leave. Right. But I'm going to do it from that compassionate place, because some people are like, oh, I can't believe I thought this thought. Like some people in like the like manifestation law of attraction stuff, I'm not really into that too much, but they get very like scared of their thoughts. They get scared of their emotions. I can't believe I thought that. And it's like this weird dynamic. And it's like, no, I'm the authority of my thoughts, but it's from a compassionate place.
Right. You know? It's not meant to be in judgment. And I think the idea, it's hard though, you know, for so many, we're so judgmental as people, you know, so of course we judge our own thoughts as well. And just having the thought, right. But the reality is the more mindful and present you can be, the more space that starts to exist, as you're talking about, between you and your thoughts. And then you get actually to decide what you think about your thoughts, which is an interesting place to be. It's like, you know, and it sounds so like, whoa, what are we talking about? But it is the reality, because you start to kind of see them in a clearer way. You're like, oh, that's an interesting thought. I wonder where that came from. Or, you know, and you could be curious, right? Like, to me, curiosity is such an important piece, because it doesn't have judgment in it. It's just, you know, you're just like looking at stuff and finding it interesting. You know, even your emotional reactions, get curious. Like, it's okay to have, and actually it's like necessary. You're going to have lots of difficult thoughts and reactions. And all of that stuff is totally okay. The more that you can separate from it, the more at peace you'll be, regardless of whether, you know, they're coming in or not. And they tend to naturally start to fade after time too. But, you know, we got to be mindful that we're not here to beat ourselves up over our own recovery process.
Exactly. And I think, especially with creating the space between your thoughts, I think it really helps for people not to then identify with their thoughts.
Right.
You know, you have the thoughts. You're the thinker of your thoughts. Your thoughts are not you. So I think sometimes when we don't have that mindfulness, when we don't have that relationship to our thoughts, when we don't have that curiosity, if you are having these super critical thoughts about yourself, you start to think, well, that must be who I am. Right. You know, if I keep telling myself, oh, you're too stupid, you're too fat, you're too this, you're too that, things don't work out for you, blah, 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 blah. Well, that must be the truth of who I am. That's what I'm thinking all the time.
Right.
But when you have that space and you have that separation, you can say, huh, who put that thought there? Well, that thought's not mine. That's not the truth of who I am. And when you have that space, it's like I was saying earlier when I said, you know what, who do I want to be? Who's the truth of who I actually am? You know, who's that higher self truth? And that higher self truth is, I'm inherently worthy. I'm inherently deserving. I'm inherently lovable. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm a human being. I'm perfectly imperfect. Right. You know, I'm unique. I'm all of these things. And then when you get the clarity of the truth of who you are, when a thought comes in that is not in alignment with that truth, it's easier to create the space and dismiss the thought.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Candy, we've covered so much in such a short period of time. I'm impressed.
Yes, we got our groove.
Yeah. So can you let everybody know where they can find you?
Absolutely. If you go to candywashington.com, you can find everything there. I have a self-care podcast called Sugar Pills, A Practical Guide to Self-Care. I also have a newsletter, and if you sign up, it's 100% free and you get a free self-love guide. And then I also have a lot of courses on the art of self-love, self-forgiveness, self-confidence, all of the yummy things that make us our most empowered selves. So definitely go to candywashington.com and you can find everything there.
Wonderful. And for anyone who's listening, definitely check Candy out. As I mentioned, I enjoy her Instagram. And for those of you who are looking to also find me on Instagram, I'm the Codependent Perfectionist, and same with the website, thecodependentperfectionist.com. And I have a new workbook out on codependency recovery. So please take some time to check that out. It should be kind of an easy, nice addition to any self-work that you're doing on yourself. So thanks everyone for joining. Thank you, Candy. I appreciate you being here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thank you.